And thanks, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, June 11th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF has recalled three members of parliament linked to depose the former Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
They went ahead to recall me, but that does not mean I will stop serving and assisting the people, the electorate who elected me.
Some opposition parties and election observers say Zimbabwe's just-ended parliamentary by-elections were marred by voter intimidation and lack of transparency.
We don't accept that one as a fair result in headland constituents because people were not allowed to freely cast their vote in the constituents.
And the cash-strapped Parenyatwa Hospital starts demanding cash up front from patients.
Yes, the speaker came and...
Some opposition parties, Harare residents and election observers say Zimbabwe's just-ended parliamentary polls in 16 constituencies were marred by lack of transparency and voter intimidation. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi reports from Harare. This is Studio 7 coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Three ZANU-PF members of parliament, Mwenes West Skudakwashe Basketi, Marondra Central's Ray Kaukonde, and Gurue North's David Butau, have been recalled from parliament. The three are part of the seven former top officials expelled from ZANU-PF in an ongoing purge targeting allies of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. President Robert Mugabe is expected to proclaim by-election dates in the three constituencies that are now vacant. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu asked Basketi about this latest development.
Yes, the speaker came and acknowledged that there is a court interdict stopping them from recalling me from parliament, but they said we will disregard that and make our pronouncement as ordered by the party. So they went ahead to recall me, but that does not mean I will stop serving and assisting the people, the electorate who elected me. People elected me to serve me up to serve them up to 2018. So the people have not recalled me, but it's a small group of people who have decided to do that. I have no problem with that because these are individuals, but the people I will continue to serve.
And how many people were recalled today? Do you know?
Yes, there were the three of us.
Did they give you the letter to say we are recalling you, and what were the reasons?
I have not even received, as we speak, a letter telling me that I'm expelled from the party. You can see the arrogance that I am not even informed formally by way of a letter that I'm expelled from the party, that they are recalling me from parliament. Nothing has been done, nothing has been given me. And they chose to go to write a letter to parliament to just quickly do that.
That was former Mwenezi West MP and former Mashingo resident minister Kudakwashe Basketi speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
We'd like to apologize. Earlier on, we introduced a story about the opposition parties and election observers saying Zimbabwe's just-ended parliamentary by-elections were marred by voter intimidation and lack of transparency. Here is Thomas Chiripasi giving us more.
Results announced today by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission indicate that President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party won all the seats in rural areas and cities, which have since 1999 been under the control of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change. Tsvangirai's party and other MDC formations, citing lack of electoral reforms, boycotted the parliamentary by-elections meant to fill seats left vacant following the recalling of some MDC renewal team lawmakers. ZANU-PF was pitted against small parties that got few votes in each constituency, leaving some of the independent candidates like Albert Mkaratirwa, who was contesting the headland seat, also crying foul.
We don't accept that one is a fair result in headland constituents, because people were not allowed to freely cast their vote in the constituents. In effect, that people were intimidated. They were actually asked to be written down their names before they went in to cast their vote. And in some cases, they were asked to come back having claimed the serial number of their ballot papers.
Some Harare residents like Patrick Mamuto of Kambuzuma said ZANU-PF's victory in yesterday's by-elections does not change anything in their livelihoods because the ruling party already has a majority in parliament.
It is just a matter of increasing numbers in parliament and a matter of also trying to use resources in parliament, because they buy each other cars, they stay in hotels and so forth. That is why you find there's a battle for positions in parliament, especially in ZANU-PF.
These sentiments were echoed by Maxwell Taderera of Kwadzana High Density Suburb.
There's nothing that is going to change. There's really nothing that will change, because they already had two-thirds majority of parliamentary representation. They could change the constitution in areas that requires parliamentary majority to change. There is nothing that they are going to do as regards the economy, looking at the caliber of the parliamentarians that they have. They really would not add any value to our legislature or the efforts to turn around the economy.
At the same time, Director of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, Irene Petras, whose organization monitored the by-elections under the umbrella of the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, or ZESNI, said they recorded a number of election irregularities in yesterday's polls, chief among them, voter intimidation.
Although the polling day was relatively peaceful, the pre-election period was marred by incidents of violence, intimidation, and vote buying.
ZESNI Director Rindai Chifundevava said a lot needs to be done to improve the electoral process in Zimbabwe.
Definitely, there were delays and also challenges which the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission faced because of funding.
The MDCT praised the electorate for heeding its call to boycott the polls following yesterday's low voter turnout in most constituencies. The party's Secretary General, Douglas Monzora, said his party did not donate the seats to ZANU-PF by not participating in the polls.
A terrible dump squid indeed, and we are very, very happy that our people heeded the call for not participating in this election without reforms. As the MDC, we are very, very serious that we want reforms before elections.
ZANU-PF's victory means that the MDCT has surrendered its political space, at least for now, to the ruling party in constituencies that it has been controlling for more than 15 years. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
But responding, ZANU-PF chairman S. Simon Kayamoyo attacked some big opposition parties for boycotting the polls.
Well, others boycotted and we participated. And once you don't claim to be a Democrat and boycott democracy, we fought for one man, one vote. And the people had this opportunity to exercise that right, which they've done. And therefore, they have won the elections. We've won the elections. And we're very happy about the outcome.
And there are some people who are saying that there was some voter intimidation. Do you agree with that?
What intimidation when you've been told to boycott? Where does intimidation come from? You've been told to boycott, so how do you get intimidated?
We're told that there are some by-elections that are coming soon, since there are some other members of ZANU-PF who have been expelled.
We don't know about that. We only know about things when
we have discussed them. We have never discussed those things.
And that was ZANU-PF Chairman Simon Kayamoyo speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Independent political commentator Chamu Madiridze tells Studio 7 the outcome of the elections was expected following the boycott of the MDC formations.
It doesn't come as a surprise that we are seeing this victory by ZANU-PF, which is very important to them because they are able to maintain the winning mentality within their support base. They are able to maintain the winning mentality even in the leadership structures of ZANU-PF. And they are making a point, actually, that despite these pledges, we are still a party to reckon with on the political landscape of Zimbabwe.
What can you say about the performance of the parties that took part in this election that managed to get as little as 19 votes?
Well, the performance is generally poor by the other parties. But I think it was due to voter apathy. These by-elections were not even taken seriously by the people of Zimbabwe or by the electorate, I must say, because there was a boycott. That's number one. And issue number two is that they have no meaning to the general people of the country who are suffering at the moment. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to the people that are struggling to make ends meet in Zimbabwe. So they actually boycotted these elections. They did not come out in their numbers. And for these upcoming political parties, I mean, it was unfortunate for them. They performed very poorly because of the voter apathy. They performed very poorly again because of ZANU-PF that has actually instituted an unleveled political field in the country.
That was Chamu Madiridze, an independent political commentator. He spoke with Studio 7 on the line from Cape Town, South Africa.
The cash-strapped Parerenyatwa Hospital is now demanding cash up front from patients, a move that has been condemned as unconstitutional by the Health Rights Board, the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. A memo circulated at the hospital indicated that, as from June 8th, admitted patients will pay between $140 and $185 per person. Cancer patients seeking oncology chemotherapy will fork out $50, and those seeking radiotherapy will pay $140. Multiple sources at the hospital told Studio 7 that the hospital is operating on a shoestring budget. Efforts to get a comment from the hospital's chief executive officer, Thomas Sindoga, were futile, as his secretary said he was not in the office. Health Minister David Parerenyatwa said he was at a function and would not comment. But Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, Dr. Rutendo Bonde, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the development is worrying.
You know, this is a sentinel issue around how poorly our health public health system is funded, and how institutions are really struggling when it comes to viability, and how unfortunately in difficult times the end user has to bear the brunt of the cost of the healthcare when the state is not in a position to be able to fulfill its constitutional mandate to provide the right to healthcare. And especially if we look at the social and economic vulnerabilities that our people are going through, my response is, I understand that rights are being violated, and it's going to mean a lot of missed opportunities for public health and a lot of poor health outcomes for the people.
But the hospital seems to be saying the government is cash-strapped, but it has to also fund its operations. Is this not a justification for them to increase the fees, to demand cash upfront before admission?
We are aware. I think everyone is aware of the limited fiscal space in which the government is operating in. But that limited fiscal space does not in any way excuse the government from fulfilling their constitutionally prescribed mandate.
That was Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights Chairperson Dr. Rutendo Bonde speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at the impact of President Robert Mugabe's African Union and SADC chairmanship on Zimbabwe and beyond.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Leaders of Nigeria and four of its neighbors met Thursday to discuss a proposed joint force to fight Islamist extremist group Boko Haram. In opening remarks, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said his country should command the task force because it will provide the bulk of the troops and the main theater of the war is on Nigerian soil.
The U.S. military chief said today the United States is considering creating more train and advise hubs for Iraqi troops even as it prepares to open a new base in Anbar province with 450 military personnel.
And Chinese state media say former security chief Zhou Yangkang has been sentenced to life in prison for corruption, making him the most powerful official to be brought down by the Communist Party's anti-graft campaign.
The Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition says President Robert Mugabe, who is the chairperson of the African Union and the Southern African Development Community, has so far failed to address human rights issues in Zimbabwe and other nations with the alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara, seriously denting his political image. In a statement released today, a few days before the 25th African Union Heads of State and Government Summit in South Africa, the organization said human rights violations continue in Zimbabwe, Swaziland, Burundi, Lesotho, and other African states without being addressed by Mr. Mugabe and his colleagues.
It said, under the leadership of the 91-year-old president, the AU has proved a distinct failure to systematically and proactively confront the multitude of woes afflicting African people. A crisis further noted efforts being made by the AU in bringing peace and stability in countries like Mali, Libya, the Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo and Madagascar, though it said serious problems remain in other nations. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks with David Monyai, an independent political commentator, David Monyai, and Joy Mabenge of Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition. Mabenge says African leaders like Mr. Mugabe must provide exemplary leadership in order to resolve problems bedeviling Africa.
Zimbabwe is showing all signs of regression and we have a responsibility to fit into what we call the early warning system and be able to say that the African Union, beyond the chairperson himself, must be able to also tackle the issues that the country that the chairperson is coming from is facing.
Dr. Monyaya, if you can come in there.
Let's go to the AU and understand firstly the structure and the position that currently held by President Robert Mugabe. It is important, firstly, to look at the provisions that govern the head of state who heads the AU as President Mugabe. One does not lead as an individual. It's a collective leadership. I think it goes back to 1963, and with the changes that took place in 2002 in Durban, the AU, as it stands, it is a collective.
Mr. Mabenge, your response there, but also touching on the question of what in particular were Zimbabweans expecting?
First and foremost, really, our expectations are well articulated by my colleague there. And we are fully cognizant of the fact that the AU works as a collective. But in terms of our expectations as Zimbabweans, the first thing that we did not expect was for the African Union to appoint President Mugabe their chairperson. Because President Mugabe's country had just emerged out of a serious crisis. But the process that was presided over by the African Union, remember Sharm el-Sheikh in 2008 and the mandate that they then pushed to SADC in terms of facilitation of a political dialogue. That process that the two institutions, SADC and the AU, did not produce or did not end the challenges that Zimbabwe was facing by an election that was held on the 31st of July 2013. This explains the reason why clearly the country continues to face challenges. This explains why, as I am speaking to you now, we have in excess of 2 million Zimbabweans that are living here in South Africa.
Dr. Munyaye, I'll come back to you there, of course, what Mr. Mabenge is saying in your response, but also the issue that President Mugabe is also the chair of SADC, where some are saying that regionally he has failed to deal with some of the issues.
One understands and is sympathetic to some of the views that are expressed, particularly on issues of governance, that Africa and Africans should and must look seriously at the matter. But to make that specific issue, a President Mugabe alone issue becomes a problem. And let me explain why am I putting it this way. The problem of massive movements of Africans, and some are dying in the Mediterranean Sea, the massive movement from Mali and West Africa, Central Africa, the DRC, and South Africa as well, these are huge governance challenges that Africans confront, and one will expect the AU to tackle the matter squarely as it discusses issues of governance on the continent. But having said that, let's go back to Zimbabwe. And I'd really caution my colleague that there isn't any specific clause that backs his view that President Mugabe does not deserve the position he holds. Regardless of what's happening at home, I think he has met the minimum standard. He has met and he's endorsed by his fellow African head of states to lead at this particular juncture.
Mr. Mabenge, your response there.
Well, I do get what Dr. Munyaye is saying. You see, the biggest challenge with what Dr. Munyaye is saying is the application of the binary logic to resolution of the challenges that we are facing as a continent. It is problematic for African bodies to set standards and then deviate from those standards in order for them to accommodate errant countries like what we saw happening in Zimbabwe in July of 2013. It is this very same problem that is coming back to haunt the African Union and the SADC.
That was independent political commentator Deft Monyai and acting national coordinator Joy Mabenge of Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, the African Union Goodwill Ambassador for Early Child Marriages, Nyaradzai Gumbonzwanda, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye she hopes that the summit will prioritize women's issues. The event is set to run under the theme Year of Women Empowerment and Development Towards Africa's Agenda 2063.
In the last 3 days, I've been here in Gauteng in South Africa for the AU summit. I'm here with over 30 girls from the continent and young women, and we've attended some of the pre-summit events and today participated in the opening of the Executive Council of the African Union, as well as the high-level panel, which was focusing on women, financial inclusion, and agriculture. So the discussion has been so much about moving from rhetoric to implementation and to real impact in communities. This is the first time since the founding of the African Union and of the OAU then that we have the whole summit focusing on women's empowerment.
And moving forward, when the heads of states do arrive this weekend, what would you like to see on the agenda, especially when it comes to women and girls?
A real commitment to the future of Africa being an investment in girls. That our girls must have education, they must be healthy, and they must have decent employment or economic opportunities so that they do not have to be married as an opt-out of poverty. So that, for me, is the first big ask that I have to the heads of state, and I'm very excited that the heads of state would be adopting the Africa Common Position on ending child marriage.
That was African Union Goodwill Ambassador Amai Nyaradzai Gumbonzwanda speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Johannesburg, South Africa.
A United States panel on Africa has been told of China building a military base in eastern Zimbabwe, raising alarm among congressmen who are now seeking answers over the development. The issue came up for discussion last Wednesday during a hearing on Zimbabwe by the U.S. Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights, and International Organizations. California Congresswoman Karen Bass posed the question to U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Dr. Shannon Smith, who had just returned from a visit in Zimbabwe. Here is the conversation between Bass and Dr. Smith during the hearing.
In recent years, Zimbabwe has strengthened trade and military ties with China, including the construction of a Chinese military base in eastern Zimbabwe. What, if any, if you could speak to that? I think there's obviously security implications for the U.S. for a military alliance between the two countries, but what do we know about that development?
I mean, I think the countries clearly enjoy a close relationship. China is active in much of Africa, as you've seen in many places, I know.
Yeah, we often talk about it economically, but not militarily.
And, you know, in a country which is suffering from so much poverty, it's a difficult, you know, sort of military expenditures in those ways is difficult, it seems to me, to justify. But I do think that it is becoming, I think that the Chinese government, too, is looking at Zimbabwe and certainly on the economic front, asking some hard questions about investing in that country and providing other forms of assistance.
They're asking hard, what does that mean?
I think that they are, like everyone else, they want to know where, for example, Zimbabwe's indigenization laws are going to take them in terms
right.
of investment. And I think that as long as that uncertainty prevails, I think even from countries from China, which they have enjoyed a relationship over the years, I think they'll find it increasingly difficult to do business.
Could you speak to what their current investments are in Zimbabwe, the Chinese? I mean, I'm going to ask you some more about the military base in a minute, but
I don't have dollar figures on them precisely.
No, not the dollar figures. What sectors they are particularly active in.
I mean, I think mining in particular, it's as the chairman noted in his opening statement, it's sort of the biggest business there, and mineral resources and other resources, other extractive industries.
On the military base, are they employing Zimbabweans?
I couldn't tell you, ma'am.
Okay. I mean, you know, one of the characteristics of some Chinese investment is they go over and build roads and build other things, but they employ the Chinese, not necessarily folks from the country.
That back and forth was between U.S. California Congresswoman Karen Bass and U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Dr. Shannon Smith, during a congressional hearing on Zimbabwe last week. Studio 7 could not independently establish the existence of any such base and its purposes. We sent questions to the Zimbabwe National Army spokesman Colonel Overson Mugwisi last week, as per his request over the matter, but he still could not comment today, saying he is waiting for clearance and clarification from his bosses. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts in the Women's Forum, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye and Praxidis Jeremiah, will be talking with experts and listeners over the African Union's theme this year, focusing on women empowerment.
To get in touch, please call 001-202-465-0318.
And now to recap today's top stories. ZANU-PF has recalled three members of parliament linked to deposed former Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
Some opposition parties and election observers say Zimbabwe's just-ended parliamentary by-elections were marred by voter intimidation and lack of transparency.
And the cash-strapped Parirenyatwa Hospital starts demanding cash upfront from patients.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.